Hi, I'm Richard Karn, and you may have seen me on TV talking about the world's number one expandable garden hose. Well, the brand new Pocket Hose Copperhead with Pocket Pivot is here, and it's a total game changer. Old-fashioned hoses get kinks and creases at the spigot, but the Copperhead's Pocket Pivot swivels 360 degrees for full water flow and freedom to water with ease all around your home. When you're all done, this rust-proof anti-burst hose shrinks back down to pocket size for effortless handling and tidy storage. Plus, your super light and ultra-durable pocket hose Copperhead is backed with a 10-year warranty. What could be better than that? I'll tell you what, an exciting radio-exclusive offer just for you. For a limited time, you can get a free pocket pivot and their 10-pattern sprayer with the purchase of any size Copperhead hose. Just text WATER to 64000. That's WATER to 64000 for your two free gifts with purchase. W-A-T-E-R to 64000.
By texting 64000, you agree to receive recurring automated marketing messages from Pocket Hose. Message and data rates may apply. No purchase required. Terms apply. Available at pockethose.com/terms.
We're ready for some football, baby.
It's a Football Friday with the boss.
I call shots like a boss.
And the gloss.
Check out my lip gloss. I only rock clear.
On the Sports Map Radio Network.
From the Sports Map Radio Studios, here's David Gao.
And Carla Dawson.
Welcome back. And the Golden State Warriors, your team, so you've always got a good insight on what's going on there. Had a bad week, right? Draymond Green punched his teammate, Jordan Poole, in a bad incident. And now the team has come out, and Steve Kerr had the press conference and addressed the question, what's going on there? What happened with Draymond Green, and why are we talking about him this week?
The reason we're still talking about it is because footage leaked. It's Ray Rice all over again. It would have been handled in-house because, as Kenny Smith from TNT said, this happens a lot in the NBA. It's just not always filmed. You know, you can go back to Jordan punching Kerr, PJ Carlissimo and Latrell Sprewell getting into it. And then you even have Paul Silas and Charles Oakley. All these things happened, but there was no footage. So listen, what I think the Golden State Warriors have done to continue to show me they are still the gold standard as an organization, they didn't shy away from it. Right away, they went into it. This is terrible. Steve Kerr said, quote, this is the worst I have ever seen in my 10 years of coaching. Like, this is really hard on our organization. Draymond Green came forward and said, really apologized to the team, to Jordan Poole, and said, I'm going through a lot of personal stuff. I thought I was on my way. I have a lot more to do. I was wrong. When do you hear an athlete say that? They've all taken responsibility. Nobody's shied away from it, which I think is so great because nowadays the blame game, the excuse train, everybody uses it. I mean, Draymond manned up. And this
is so interesting. His apology was not what you often hear from athletes, which is, I'm sorry if that hurt other people.
Right.
As if
which is not a real apology.
It's about what somebody else experienced, not I'm sorry for what I did. And he did own that.
Right.
But now the Warriors have chosen not to suspend him, but to fine him. And we don't know the amount of it. So some have said, well, wait a minute. An undisclosed amount is a fine, and a lack of a suspension isn't enough. What was your take there?
I think they did exactly the right thing because, you know what? This team is close, and they know what Draymond Green's personal issues are. They're not excusing any of it. They're not going to allow him to miss him getting his championship ring when they open the season with the Lakers. They don't have one single championship without him. I like how the Warriors are handling it in-house. And the problem is the rebel who leaked the video to TMZ.
All right, we'll be right back with some NFL talk. That up next here on the Sports Map Radio Network.
Football Friday with the Boss and the Gloss continues now on the Sports Map Radio Network.
From the Sports Map Radio Studios, here's David Gao and Carla Dawson.
Welcome back. You know, in hour number one, we talked about coaches on the hot seat, and there are a number of them out there. I mean, Matt Rhule's already been fired. You're looking for Josh McDaniels' head. The Raiders are off to a slow start with all that talent. He's certainly a consideration for being on the hot seat. Frank Reich might be on the hot seat.
Nathaniel Hackett,
to be sure. One guy who's off to a bad start, who I don't think is on anyone's hot seat, though, is Mike Tomlin. Mike Tomlin, the Steelers, 1-4. And what's amazing, of course, is Mike Tomlin has been around forever and never had a losing season. He's had a break-even season,
like,
but he's never had a losing
season. 17 or 18 years, something crazy.
Even in lean years or years when the starting quarterback was out, Tomlin would find a way with defense, a running game. He would put it all together and come out with wins. But right now, it doesn't look like even the gifted coaching of Mike Tomlin can resurrect this Steelers team. 1-4 now. And then when you look ahead, their schedule gets really tough. They face the Buccaneers this week, then the Dolphins.
Oh, boy.
Then the Eagles, Saints, and Bengals.
Oh, man. Okay.
So 1-4 could easily be 1-8 after the next four games. And they've got Pickett at quarterback. And look, he's got some talent, but he's a rookie. He's not anybody who's going to blow you away right now. He was the 20th quarterback taken overall, not the first quarterback taken over, first player taken overall. It really looks like lean times in Pittsburgh.
No, it is, because they're left with a young core and they're kind of patching things together. Remember, they don't have TJ Watt. He's still out with a torn pec. So that's huge, because not only are they not able to do anything offensively, which they had Mitch Trubisky. We have seen Mitch Trubisky is not the answer for anybody right now. Okay. So when they brought him in, did you really expect this was going to be an offensive juggernaut? No. But what I see more concerning than what's going on with Kenny Pickett. So when they had to roll to Kenny Pickett for, quote, what Tomlin said was new energy, you know, mid-game 2 weeks ago, brought him in, and he threw several picks. I mean, I can understand that. He is a rookie, and even though he played in that stadium in college with Pitt, it's not the same. You're facing NFL defenses that are fast and smart and good, and you've never had this action before. So I don't really want to fault Kenny Pickett talent-wise just yet, because he's been thrown into the fire. The Bills hung a 38-3 game on the Steelers. Now, they are the Bills, a very well-coached game. But Josh Allen had almost 350 yards passing in the first half alone.
Yeah.
So to me, I'm like, okay, Minkah Fitzpatrick, you've got some pieces on defense. Yes, losing TJ Watt is a big deal. But so I'm concerned, number one, about the defense. But number two, what I saw with Kenny Pickett that concerns me, it's not his talent. It's his feistiness. He was going after, like, fisticuffs with defensive linemen who were tackling him. He felt like he was going after my knees. Kenny, welcome to the big boys. This is the NFL. You're going to get tackled because you have a bullseye on you. I think he needs some maturity.
He just left the one open. This is the NFL. You're a quarterback. If you're going to get tackled, you may get a roughing the penalty call.
Yeah, well,
go ahead and get tackled.
He did it too early in the day.
He was ahead of his time.
Wait till after Monday night.
I digress.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
No, you're so right. But that, I just think he needs some maturity. That, to me, because he had two different times in the game.
Sure.
He tried to get into fights with the defense. And I'm like, that is not your role as a signal caller. Your line should be protecting you, and they will if they see something egregious, or your receivers or whatever it is. No, Kenny, you don't put yourself in that kind of harm's way. This is not a backstreet alley. Your thoughts?
Well, one thing I want to state explicitly is I think Mike Tomlin is one of the best coaches in the NFL.
I do too.
Classic get-up fashion. Get-up, of course, the morning show on ESPN. They had this conversation, a roundtable, around what's going on with the Steelers. And Kimberly Martin, that woman on the show, laid all the blame at Mike Tomlin's feet.
Oh, no, no.
In fact,
no.
The headline under her short video excerpt is, "This is the reason Mike Tomlin deserves all the blame for the Steelers' struggles." Well, I just think that's a naive opinion, and it's an overreaction to five games. Look, I don't think they're going to right the ship this year, but they began the year with Trubisky at quarterback and Pickett as the backup. What would you expect?
Right.
And it's not like Tomlin is making the personnel decisions on that team. They have a general manager who is procuring the talent. And so I'm just not going to put the blame at the feet of a coach whose track record speaks for itself. And so I really
never had a losing season in 17, 18 years of coaching.
Yeah, it's just funny when I hear someone like that, Kimberly Martin, rail against a Mike Tomlin. I just think it's out of touch with his place in the league. Who is she and who is he? We're talking about one of the best coaches in the last decade, and I think he's just exceptional. And if he were to get fired, the phones would be ringing instantaneously. Everyone would want to have him.
He wouldn't have his desk packed up before he had another job.
He would have a job anywhere in the NFL. And so, yes, tough times in Pittsburgh, but let's not lay all, quote, all the blame belongs to Mike Tomlin.
Agreed.
That's a headline clickbait play.
It's a
microwave analysis. It's a get-up hyperbolic statement that you just see on that show in the morning, which I really think is short-sighted.
You're kind of guilting me out about what I said about Josh McDaniels then too. He probably needs some more time. I have the Denver history in my head. And so, you know.
Well, his track record as a head coach is not good.
It's not good.
Whereas Mike Tomlin is exceptional. So
true.
That's a huge distinction.
That's true.
We've
okay,
not seen Josh McDaniel excel as a head coach. In fact, we've not seen many of the Belichick disciples excel as head coaches. But Josh McDaniels is a known individual. He's not just one of the many
That's
disciples,
right.
But many of them have struggled. The point is there's not any certainty that somebody who coached underneath Bill Belichick, therefore, will be able to go and have the kind of success that Belichick had when they go to another place. And that's certainly been true with Josh McDaniels, but we could go down the list of other guys. Bill O'Brien is another one. Joe Judge is another one.
Oh, yeah.
Matt Patricia is another one. These guys coached under
Brian
Belichick.
Flores is another
Brian
one.
Flores. They had their season under Belichick, but something doesn't translate when they go somewhere else, which in one sense makes Belichick seem even more special because there's something unique about him and his presence there that has sustained Patriots' success. I mean, the Patriots...
Two words for you. Bailey Zappi.
Do they win with Bailey Zappi? I mean, this is a third-string quarterback who's drafted in the fourth round.
Yeah.
It's just bizarre to me that that can happen. And then Josh McDaniel, a Belichick disciple, has Derek Carr and all the weapons and a very talented team. And yet they couldn't win the game or have their starter off 1-4. So, no, it's a different beast being under Belichick
point.
Or being elsewhere. Josh McDaniels, we shall see. But he doesn't have that same sort of track record and credibility that I think Mike Tomlin has. I think he's far more open to questioning and far more worthy of being on the hot seat.
Yeah, I agree with you. Great points.
So the other game I just wanted to touch on quickly, we talked about how the Giants defeated the Packers in what was an extraordinary game. We talked all about the Giants and how the NFC East is doing so much better than we all thought coming into the season. Giants, Eagles, Cowboys, all seemingly playing at an elite level right now, all with good records. But the Packers lost. I mean, the Packers barely won last week in a tight matchup with Bailey Zappi and the Patriots. And then the Packers, who had a 14-point lead at one point, lost to the Giants. Aaron Rodgers isn't good with adversity. He's not good at the post-game commentary, and he's usually not very supportive of his teammates. Can the Packers get themselves on the right track?
Can Aaron get himself on the right track? Can he stop the blame game? I mean, I'm over it. Look at his numbers. His QBR in the first half on Sunday was 56.
Mm.
You want to know what his QBR was in the second half?
Tell me.
34.
Wow.
Okay, but he was the first one, so the Packers were outscored 17-2 in the second half, and Rodgers had several deflected passes, including in the red zone, but yet he gets into that post-game presser, and he's naming his players and throwing them under the bus.
Mm.
Who wants to play for that? I'm sorry. Like, Aaron Rodgers, you are a freakish talent, obviously. You're a 2-3-time MVP, a one-time Super Bowl winner, but you also is just how I went on my Carson Wentz rant, as the franchise, hauling in the paycheck that you haul in, wearing that red jersey that no one can touch you, especially after this past weekend, you have to galvanize your locker room, not polarize it. And by him calling out different people, a receiver, the defense, you know, whoever it is that he does week after week, you are not helping your cause. And this is why you just lost to the New York Football Giants.
Coming up next, we're going to get a chance to visit with KVNC radio host Jake Asman. And we're going to ask him about the rise of the Jets. Jets with a big win last week.
He's a Cradle Jets fan. This is going to be fun.
It'll be Jake Asman next here on the Sports Map Radio Network.
You're listening to The Boss and the Gloss on the Sports Map Radio Network.
From the Sports Map Radio Studios, here's David Gao and Carla Dawson.
Welcome back to The Boss and the Gloss. I am the boss. Carla Dawson is the gloss. And somebody who's been pretty glossy, pretty visible over the years is OBJ. Odell Beckham Jr.
Glossy and flossy.
He's got a lot going on. Yes. Ever since that big one-handed catch that was done on Sunday Night Football. And
three teams ago.
Chris Collinsworth was just gushing about him for the rest of the night. Ever since that moment, he's been in the spotlight, and he's had some flashes of high performance. He, of course, was traded to the Browns, wound up with the Rams last year, got a Super Bowl ring, tore his ACL, is rehabbing now, and he will return to the NFL probably pretty soon. The question is, where? Where do you see as the best fit for OBJ?
The Rams.
You think he should go back to Sean McVay and Matt Stafford and that whole team?
You know, and actually, maybe the way that you asked the question is not my answer.
Well, usually I don't ask questions very well. So
you,
that's
the
matter.
You are the master. But I would say that I don't know if it's the best fit for him.
Yeah.
Scheme-wise, but it is the best for him.
Mm.
Because as you mentioned, he's glossy. He's Hollywood. He's bright lights. The Rams are struggling. He gets to be the savior. If he comes back and all of a sudden they're doing better, and he's got a great connection with Matthew Stafford. He was doing absolutely phenomenal in the Super Bowl before he was injured and did great for them all season. The team likes him. He knows the scheme. He has a chance to shine, because other places that need receivers, you know, would be like Green Bay, for example. Well, if I'm OBJ, I'm looking at Aaron Rodgers throwing my receivers under the bus every week, or whoever else Rodgers feels like he didn't perform up to snuff. And maybe I don't really want to do that, even though they're obviously missing a really relevant number one since Davante Adams left for Las Vegas. I don't see that that's a good... And OBJ in Wisconsin?
I'm sorry. That is hard to believe. My problem with the Rams is they just don't look very good right now. Now, it's still early.
But they don't have him.
They're 2-3 right now. Cooper Kupp is... Well, he's getting a lot of coverage, pressure, hits. I mean, the Cowboys beat him up. Look, he made a great catch and broke a long one. He is an extraordinary talent.
And so is the Cowboys' defense.
And the Cowboys' defense is a pretty strong defense. The problem with the Rams' offense, though, really right now, to me, is less a lack of receivers and more a weak offensive line. Regardless, they would benefit from having another weapon. And Matt Stafford has not looked like the Matt Stafford of last year. He looks like the Matt Stafford of Detroit thus far.
Thank you. That needs to be said. Yes, last year he came into a new system, a new division, did all the things, won a Super Bowl with OBJ and Cooper Kupp.
Yep.
Let's be real. He's still Matt Stafford.
Yep.
He had 14 years in Detroit that never went to a playoff game. So, yes, is some of that coaching and kind of a mess that's Detroit? Yes. But he's still Matt Stafford. So I'm glad you brought that up. I think that's a great point.
So to me, there are real questions about going back to the Rams. You mentioned the Packers, and look, Aaron, at least Aaron's been telling us all, he needs better receivers, and they don't have Davante Adams, so why not bring back OBJ? But I do think there's a culture on that team that if I were OBJ, I would resist, and the culture is an Aaron Rodgers-centric world. You have to come in and orbit around me. I'm Aaron Rodgers, and that's the nexus of that team, and it doesn't feel like the same environment that the Rams had at least last year. And I think OBJ will look hard at that.
Also with Green Bay is the fact that Aaron Rodgers, we don't know if he's coming back next year. We didn't even know if he was going to be coming back this year. So why would OBJ want to sign up for anything? He just want to do a one-year deal. He's going to want something longer. And why would he want to go someplace where the MVP that he would be playing for, because that's the most important piece in Green Bay, is probably going to be gone?
Okay, let's set Green Bay aside. Then the Rams have their issues. To me, Tampa Bay makes a ton of sense because they need receiver help as well. And they are a team built to go deep into the season. They have an extraordinary defense. I mean, because Tom Brady gets so many headlines, it's easy to overlook the defense of the Buccaneers, which was catalytic to their Super Bowl championship 2 years ago. And to add a receiver there, Brady's been very good at both recruiting receivers and integrating receivers quickly into an offense. I mean, look, if they would stoop and take Antonio Brown, then
anything's possible.
Anything's possible. Clearly, they were willing to take Antonio Brown based on his talent and what he could do for the team. That being the case, I got to believe they're going to take a hard look and recruit OBJ to join the Buccaneers.
Yeah, I mean, I can see that happening. They're very injury riddled right now. There's no doubt about that.
Yep.
I just think that's a whole new system for OBJ. I think he's going to go back to the bright lights of LA where he's comfortable and where he knows he can succeed, especially with that. And because, I mean, anyone can succeed with Tom Brady.
Yep.
So I think that's very viable. I agree with you.
I mean, the other one that's been tossed out as we were doing show prep, the Buffalo Bills. I mean, Stephon Diggs is out of this world, has been exceptional for them, and really helped Josh Allen develop and go to the next level as a quarterback. OBJ on that team, I'm not sure. One of the things that strikes me, and this may not be fair, because last year with the Rams, OBJ had a bit of a rehab season, at least in terms of his reputation in my eyes. My view of OBJ was he was a bit of a prima donna wide receiver, coming into the huddle, screaming, throw it to me, throw it to me, throw it to me. The kind of guy who, when he was with the Browns and had Baker Mayfield, Mayfield then felt this obligation to feed OBJ, sometimes force the ball to OBJ that would lead to mistakes. When he got to the Rams, he really wasn't the number one receiver. Cooper was. And so that being the case,
pressure was off.
Yeah, the pressure is off. And frankly, his ability to scream loud and say, throw me the ball, throw me the ball. I'm the man. I'm the alpha male here. It was reduced greatly on that particular team. And so I don't know. I like him back at the Rams, I guess, for the Rams. But I feel like he's going to be with the Buccaneers. But it will be fascinating to watch. Clearly, if he wants to go to a winner, the Buccaneers and the Bills would be exceptional choices, because those two right now, the Bucs and the Bills, are on the short list to be Super Bowl playing teams. I mean, you can throw in the Chiefs, you could throw in other teams, but the Eagles certainly on the NFC. But I like the Bucs and the Bills right now for my Super Bowl picks.
Okay, I'm not gonna doubt you.
One team that seemingly has the talent to go to the Super Bowl but has struggled of late is the San Diego Chargers, or I should say the LA Chargers. But Brandon Staley, their head coach, has come under fire for lots of his decisions. He loves to go for it on fourth down, but he almost gave that game to the Browns last week. Chargers beating the Browns, but it really should have gone the other way.
You know what Brandon Staley needs to do? He needs to send flowers to York, Cleveland's kicker, who missed two field goals and what would have been the game winner from 54 yards. Early in the NFL season, do you remember what I said to you about the Chargers? Their roster, top to bottom, probably the most stacked, for sure the most stacked in their division, even more than the Chiefs, and maybe in the NFL, certainly top three.
Maybe the Bills, the Chargers, maybe the Eagles, but you're talking, the Chargers are one of the three or four most talented teams in the league, sure.
Stacked. And I said, but they can't get out of their own way because of head coach Brandon Staley. And it keeps showing up week after week like this. I mean, they really tried every way possible to give that game to Cleveland. I mean, Brandon Staley turning it over on downs, the drive before, gave it to the Browns with great field position. I mean, it's just so confusing and so frustrating. And someone in that Chargers organization needs to take a stand and put a hand on Brandon Staley, or they need to change coaches because he keeps hurting them. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you go back to that terrible decision in that very tense division rivalry game last season that ended the Chargers season in Las Vegas at Allegiant Stadium. A tie would have sent both teams to the playoffs and Pittsburgh home, but a Raiders win would have sent Pittsburgh on. And Rick Bisaccia, it was such a tight game, and Justin Herbert was lighting it up like on 4th and 15, 4th and 10, 4th and 15. I mean, it was so crazy. Just bonehead moves. You know, I don't understand it. He's young. I think he's not allowing himself to learn from his own mistakes.
And he's in a tough AFC West. Chiefs are now playing at a very high level. You can feel Patrick Mahomes comfortable with his new receivers. He's finding Kelsey all over the field. It's a really great Chiefs team.
Really the only formidable ones besides the Chargers in that division.
That's right. Well, so right now the Broncos and Raiders have had their struggles. Lots of talent on both those teams. So we shall see. The Chargers are poised to at least get to a wild card spot. They're certainly, the cards have landed in a good place for them with the struggles that the Raiders and the Broncos have had. The other big game, well, there are several big games this week that I'm looking ahead. Sunday Night Football, of course, we've got the Eagles-Cowboys showdown for the top spot in the NFC East. Cowboys have a win over the Giants, so they have at least the moment the tiebreaker over the Giants. They're both 4-1. Eagles 5-0, Cowboys 4-1. The game is in Philly, always a tough environment for the Dallas Cowboys. Philly's fans are ruthless and tough. It does look like at this moment that Cooper Rush will start again for the Cowboys. Dak Prescott's finger healing and apparently close, but they're going to trust him and see how well he can throw the ball this week. I just think it looks like they're going to take the cautious side, and why not? Because Cooper Rush, they figured out a formula to win with him.
It's working.
It's working.
That ain't broke, don't change it.
But they clearly, I mean, against a very good Eagles team, the probability of winning is better with Dak. They'd love to get Dak back, but maybe they need to rest him for at least one more week on the side of caution and then look ahead to the rest of the season, presumably with a healthy Dak Prescott.
Well, and I think the issue with Prescott, you would know more intimately than me, is his ability to grab the football. Yep. It's still a little fluttery.
It's his throwing hand on which the finger is broken. And That takes some time because you've really got to grip the ball in order to spin it when you make your throws, and whether he can do that consistently. And look, he's going to get hit. He's going to get beat up. His fingers, he'll land on his fingers on the field. I think it's time to be cautious. And look, if they end up 4-2 because they failed to win this game, there's still a lot of this season left to play.
They're still alive and well. Mm-hmm. I mean, look at this fun stat. The Cowboys, for the first time in 50 years, have allowed less than 20 points in each of their first five games.
Yeah, first time in 50 years.
50-0.
That's amazing. Go way back to the early Doomsday defense. Not Doomsday 2, but the Doomsday 1. And that really reflects where they are now as a team. All right, when we come back, we're going to get to make our picks for the games we're most excited to see this coming weekend. That up next year on the Boston The Gloss Sports Map Radio.
Football Friday with the Boss and the Gloss continues now on the Sports Map Radio Network.
From the Sports Map Radio Studios, here's David Gow and Carla Dawson.
Welcome back, and joining us here on the Sports Map Radio Network is Jake Asman. He's a radio show host on KFNC Houston, and he is a savant of all things NFL. And Jake, we need to begin with your New York Jets. I know it's your hometown beloved team. And they are 3-2, which is almost hard to say out loud. Congrats. And are even you surprised?
You know, it feels so weird because all I've known for really the last decade plus has been the season being over by the first week of October. I mean, the Jets haven't won a game in September in 4 years until this year. They had lost 12 straight games in the AFC East until this past Sunday when they beat Miami. So it's just been bad for so long, and you want to believe in their offseason because everyone was saying how great it was, and Robert Saleh is a really likable guy, but until you see it, it's just tough to really think things are ever going to actually get better. And here we are. They got an exciting young team. Quarterback's playing better so far since he came back from injury, and Zach Wilson. So this is the happiest I've been as a Jet fan in a long time.
Well, I have to say, Carla and I were just talking about this. We were all in Vegas. Carl and I were. You were there. We were at the NFL draft. And when the Jets landed three first-round picks, they traded into the first round late to get Jermaine Johnson as a third pick to go along with Garrett Wilson and, of course, Sauce Gardner up top at their pick draft board. I remember, Carl and I felt like you seemed like a young kid at his birthday party, sort of dazed and excitement had happened. It was just almost too good to be true. How are those three rookies performing in your eyes?
You know, they have been great, David. And you're right. I really was like just a kid on Halloween, you know, looking at all this candy I was about to eat. It was crazy. I mean, Jermaine's played really well. And, you know, he obviously, you know, is coming into a system that fits his strengths, the type of defense that Robert Saleh likes to call. And, you know, they were so excited to get him because, I mean, who would have thought going into that draft Jermaine Johnson would last to number 26 overall? There was some talk about the Jets taking him all the way at 10. And instead they went with Garrett Wilson because they needed a true number one receiver. He's been phenomenal. Sauce Gardner, I think, has a legitimate chance to win Defensive Rookie of the Year. He's one of the biggest favorites to win that award right now. It's been surreal. You hear about all this hype for a Jets draft class, and then you got to see it. And, you know, so far, the draft's been phenomenal. And, you know, throwing Breece Hall, who they traded up for at the beginning of the second round, he had 200 yards of offense by himself in this game this past Sunday, and he's been really coming on the last couple of weeks. So it's a big reason why they're 3-2, this draft class of 2022.
Yeah, it was a great draft class. I agree with you, Jake. And how do you feel about, so Zach Wilson had a really turnover-prone first season. He's doing much better after coming back from injury. What do you see, you know, Robert Saleh is a defensive guy. What do you see in Zach Wilson's development? Do you feel like, you know what, I think they got this right. I think we've got our franchise. Or are you in a wait-and-see approach? I'd love to hear your thoughts.
You're definitely still in a wait-and-see approach just because he hasn't even played, you know, a full 17-game season yet because he missed time last year. He missed some time the first three games of this year. But so far this year, he's built on what he did at the end of last year where he did clean up a lot of those issues turnover-wise. Most of those interceptions came the first nine games of the year. And, you know, he actually ended last year with five straight games without throwing a pick. So we're like, okay, well, there's some improvement. And now, because he has weapons around him, because he has some consistency from a coaching staff standpoint. Mm-hmm. Mike LaFleur is the second-year offensive coordinator. He's the brother of Packers head coach, right? Matt LaFleur. He's a guy that has done a pretty good job developing Zach Wilson. And it's still early. There are things Zach has to clean up, but he just looks more comfortable you know, as a in year two. And that's what you wanted to see. Like, he doesn't need to be Patrick Mahomes for this team to win. It's weird as a Jet fan. They actually have talent on this team. They have good defensive players. They have really good offensive weapons. If Zach at times could just be a game manager, they'll win some games like they did this past Sunday. But what we saw against the Steelers, when they're down 10 in the fourth, or excuse me, they're down 14 points in the fourth quarter, and Zach Wilson showed the ability to lead them back and go 10 of 12 in that fourth quarter and lead the game-winning drive. You saw that ability where he could take over a game. So there's going to be some rough spots, of course. You know, he's still in his second year. He's young. But we have seen a noticeable improvement so far through these first two games. And once again, as a Jet fan, I'm not used to competent quarterback play, so it's been surreal.
I love your candor, Jake. You're spot on. Another quarterback I want to ask you about quickly, flip over to the AFC South. Trevor Lawrence, I consider this season to be his rookie year. You know, all was lost under the joke of Urban Meyer. But I was in attendance at the Jacksonville Texans game, and it was really, he was really off on Sunday. Do you think Trevor Lawrence is on the right track, and do you think he is improving? What does he need to do? Is this a guy that can lead this franchise?
I think for him, it's just consistency, right? I mean, there were some moments this year where he had a great game against the Chargers that they won, and then he follows that up with the game against the Eagles 2 weeks ago where he has five total turnovers and, oh, you know, it's raining, the ball was wet,
say
okay,
weather,
fine.
Yeah.
But what's the excuse against, you know, a Texans team that came into that game as the only team in the NFL without a win so far this year? So I think week to week, you just don't know what you're getting from him at this point. He has all the talent in the world. We've seen the flashes, but can he consistently put it together? He's got the right coach. I totally agree with you, Carly. I think Doug Peterson was a great hire. Going from Urban Meyer to him is like, well, you know, it's, you can't get any more polar opposites there in a good way. But he's got to be more consistent. I mean, you go back and you watch that game, there were plays he could have made. That throw in the end zone that Derek Stingley Jr. picked off. Geez. It's just, I don't care if you're a rookie, a second-year quarterback. It's just, that just can't happen. Like, in a game that's so low scoring, that directly led to them losing that game.
It was so painful to watch. Do you think there's anything to make of when Trevor Lawrence finished his college career, the time between then and the draft, that Sports Illustrated article where he said, football's not my life. This is not. And it was a big deal made about that. And his dad had to come and talk, you know, and say, hey, he's all in. Do you think there's anything to that, that like he's maybe more cavalier than someone in his position should be?
You know, I haven't thought about that. And it's interesting you brought up that Sports Illustrated comment because it was such a big deal. And then it kind of got forgotten about. And I think last year, the Urban Meyer drama kind of overshadowed everything. So Trevor Lawrence maybe didn't get the criticism, you know, a quote unquote generational prospect would get who really struggled. But it's definitely something that could come up again if he continues to struggle. I don't know if it's, you know, if those comments illustrated why he's going to struggle as an NFL player, but it's definitely something that I believe will probably resurface in the coming weeks if his struggles continue.
We're talking to Jake Aspin, radio show host at KFNC Houston. And we've been talking about Sauce Gardner. We talked about the Jets and what a great impact Sauce Gardner has been, perhaps defensive player of the year, rookie of the year at least. But right before him, the Texans took Darryl Stingley. And you're here in Houston. What have you seen out of Stingley? How do you compare the two? Do you think the Texans are feeling good that they have Stingley at number three as opposed to taking Sauce at number four?
So this is not even revisionist history because I said it the night we were all in Vegas together on the show The Wheelhouse that we host locally in Houston. I would have taken Sauce if I was the Texans from the standpoint that Sauce didn't have.
And we agreed with you, by the way. I remember we were, remember we had this very conversation. Why didn't the Texans take Sauce? But
right.
Go ahead. They've taken Stingley. So how has that fared out?
I think Derek Stingley Jr. has played pretty well at times. Here's the thing with rookie corners. A lot of them tend to struggle. That's why what Sauce has been able to do so far has been so impressive. But Stingley's had his moments where he's played well. He obviously made the big play in this game that helped them win over the Jaguars on Sunday. Now he's had his moments. Cortland Sutton beat him up pretty good week two against the Broncos. But Derek Stingley Jr., I think, has played well. The big thing for him is just staying healthy. He's been healthy so far, and that was a big question I had coming in, just because he had only played 10 games the last 2 years since his freshman season at LSU. So far he's been healthy, he's been solid, and I bet you he gets better as the year goes on. A lot of people love to compare Sauce versus Stingley, and they're obviously always going to be compared to one another because they went back-to-back picks in the same draft class. But there is a scenario that I think is going to happen where both guys are really good at football, and I think we're going to see that play out as the year goes on.
Well, let's hope so for both teams. Okay, since we're talking Texans for a minute here, Davis Mills, the quarterback, are we at the point where it's time to conclude he's not the future of the franchise and the Texans need to be thinking about whom to take at the top of next year's draft?
It feels like we're headed down that path if we're not there already. Now, I was all in favor of giving Davis Mills a legitimate shot. I felt like you rather take your chance with him, and if it doesn't work out, it's much easier to move on from him and draft a guy with one of your two first-round picks. I felt like that was smarter than, you know, bringing Jimmy G or Baker Mayfield, and you feel like you have a very limited ceiling with what those guys could be with this roster. So I understood what they were doing with Mills, but the reality is that the more likelihood than not, this was where this was headed, where he's probably not the guy, not a long-term starter, and you move on. He does still have time to change that narrative and turn things around, but based on what we have seen so far through the first five games of the year, it kind of does feel like this is a Texans team that's going to be picking near the top of the draft, and they're going to have to get a guy in a quote-unquote loaded QB class.
You know, and to be fair to Davis Mills, I mean, he was not drafted to be the starter for the Texans. You know, he had Tyrod Taylor going down, and then, you know, Davis Mills had 13 starts in his college career, 4 years, because of injury. And I look at the weapons, or shall I say, the lack of weapons that he has. But speaking of quarterbacks, Jake, Russell Wilson, did you expect this kind of performance for Mr. Let's Ride?
No. I mean, you talk about a bad situation. I think I'd rather be the Texans right now with Davis Mills than Russell Wilson.
Because you didn't pay him $250 million either.
Exactly. You could start over. With Russell Wilson, he's making incredible amount of money, all guaranteed over the next few years. They don't have their first or second round pick the next 2 years. They traded away some other picks and Noah Fant in that trade. I mean, look, I don't think Russ is this bad. I think maybe part of his struggles have a lot to do with his head coach is seemingly in over his head right now. He's dealing with a shoulder injury, but let's call it for what it is. He's looked bad. He looked bad at the end of last year, and everyone just blamed Pete Carroll and the Seahawks for that. This is a bad situation if you're a Bronco fan right now.
Right now, Geno Smith has outperformed Russell Wilson. Who would have thought that?
Right. believe me, I never would have thought that in a million years as someone who watched a lot of Geno Smith years ago.
You know, comparing
quarterbacks,
as we had fun with Sauce versus Stingley in last year's draft. The year before, of course, you had Zach Wilson and Trey Lance back-to-back, and there was some debate over who was the best pick, et cetera. But Zach Wilson right now looks a whole lot more promising than Trey Lance. In fact, Carla and I have been feeling like the best thing that happened to the 49ers was an injury to Trey Lance, because that put Jimmy G back on the field, and they're a better team with Jimmy G.
I agree with you. And, you know, you look at this Niners team, it never really felt right to go to Trey Lance. Now, maybe Trey Lance ends up being a great player, but, you know, now we're talking about a guy that, you know, is going to be going into his third year next year, and you still don't know what he is. And, you know, this is a Niners team that was leading in the NFC Championship game late in the fourth quarter last year with Jimmy G at quarterback. They've been to a Super Bowl with him, so clearly they can win with the guy. The question for the Niners going forward with Trey Lance is fascinating, because they traded three first-round picks to move up for a guy, and they're about to be two full years in and still have no idea what he is as a player.
No, I think that ankle injury, Kyle Shanahan was like, phew, I don't have to answer questions.
Yeah, he was
honestly
boxed in, because he had to know in his heart of hearts that Jimmy G gave them a better chance to win this year. But Trey Lance was the bet he made, and he almost had to stick with that bet. And it was a very awkward position. So anyway, it worked out for them now. Not by grand design, clearly.
No, and nobody wishes or is happy about anybody's injury, but that situation got Kyle Shanahan off the hook. He doesn't have to answer to that now. But he will next year.
So in your AFC East there with your Jets, the Bills just look like a juggernaut. What are your expectations for the Jets in that division?
I think for the Jets, if they're able to go out there and they're able to play meaningful games in December, they've had a pretty good year. And by that, I mean, when you're watching a game on Fox or ESPN or CBS and they show the playoff graphic and it says in the hunt and you see the Jets name there, I think they've done their part as far as, you know, getting this rebuild in the on the right path here. They won four games last year. They've already won three this year. If they could figure out a way to go 7-10, 8-9, I think every Jet fan would have signed for that. So maybe the expectations change. If they could beat the Packers or beat the Broncos or, you know, finally beat the Patriots, then you start to think, hey, could this team make the playoffs? But as a Jet fan, I just wanted the season to be alive, you know, past the first month of the year for the first time in 5 years. And they're doing that given this fan base an exciting season, which has been fun.
Sometimes as a fan, the best thing is to come in with low expectations and be pleasantly surprised. And that's where you guys are. Congrats to your Jets. And by the way, Jake, thanks so much for joining us. You can hear Jake Asman on KFNC Houston. Really appreciate you joining us, Jake.
Anytime, David, and congrats to your Cowboys. I mean, Cooper Rush, he's given every redhead out there a great name. I'm thrilled for him.
He's the second best redhead in all of
sports,
behind only you, Jake.
I appreciate it, guys. Thank you so much for having me. Great to be back on The Boss and The Gloss. I mean, it's the best show on Sports Map Radio.
And
there
it's
we
the
go.
Best with you, Jake. Thank you.
Take care.
This is The Boss
and the Gloss
on the Sports Map Radio Network.
From the Sports Map Radio Studios, here's David Gow
and Carla Dawson.
Welcome back to The Boss and Gloss Sports Map Radio. Okay, looking ahead to this weekend, we get to pick one game you're most excited to watch and why. Tell me your pick this week.
Okay, you're going to be surprised. I want to see the Ravens at the Giants.
Ravens at Giants. The suddenly very strong Giants, 4-1 Giants, hosting the Ravens.
This will tell me a lot about the G-men. Like, you've just come off of a come-from-behind, two-touchdown come-from-behind win for Green Bay in London. You now have traveled back. Can you keep – this is going to be on Brian Daboll. Can you keep that momentum going after you've taken down a juggernaut like Aaron Rodgers? You're now facing a true dual threat, amazing quarterback who Lamar Jackson is probably one of the best running backs in the NFL. Can you keep this up, and what can you do? Because they just had a big win. Baltimore just had a big win against Cincinnati on Sunday Night Football. So we've got 3-2 Ravens taking on the New York Football Giants at 4-1. In New York, I can't wait for that one. I think this will tell a lot about where these two teams sit, and I'm excited.
Yes, I wonder what the travel time back from London and the time zone shift does to the team.
Even more so just not having a letdown after beating Green Bay.
That's right. It was such a big signature win to beat the Packers. Ravens are good. Ravens are 3-2, and that was a great win over the Bengals.
It was a tight one.
A great win. Okay, I'm going to go with the marquee matchup of the week. Perhaps this will not surprise anybody, but the Chiefs-Bills matchup is really intriguing to me. Of course, it is a revenge game, a replay game from the epic playoff game last year,
man,
when Mahomes brought the Chiefs down. And of course, to Josh Allen, poor guy, never got back on the field in overtime. It's just an amazing turn of events.
It's a revenge game.
And to me, that game was a breakout game for Josh Allen because he went toe-to-toe with the most prolific passer in the NFL in Patrick Mahomes, and he held his own. And it seemed that the only thing that defeated him in the end was a coin toss and the chance he didn't get to back on the field in overtime. But he did just as well as Mahomes. He went down the stretch, and he was far less heralded at that time. But by the end of that game, I think everybody recognized this is a franchise quarterback, and he hasn't missed a beat this year. He's been performing at the highest levels yet again.
And expectations on Josh Allen and him leading the Bills are sky high, which is hard to play under, but he is delivering.
These are probably the two most elite teams in the AFC right now.
Hi, I'm Richard Karn, and you may have seen me on TV talking about the world's number one expandable garden hose. Well, the brand new Pocket Hose Copperhead with Pocket Pivot is here, and it's a total game changer. Old-fashioned hoses get kinks and creases at the spigot, but the Copperhead's Pocket Pivot swivels 360 degrees for full water flow and freedom to water with ease all around your home. When you're all done, this rust-proof anti-burst hose shrinks back down to pocket size for effortless handling and tidy storage. Plus, your super light and ultra-durable pocket hose Copperhead is backed with a 10-year warranty. What could be better than that? I'll tell you what, an exciting radio-exclusive offer just for you. For a limited time, you can get a free pocket pivot and their 10-pattern sprayer with the purchase of any size Copperhead hose. Just text WATER to 64000. That's WATER to 64000 for your two free gifts with purchase. W-A-T-E-R to 64000.
By texting 64000, you agree to receive recurring automated marketing messages from Pocket Hosts. Message and data rates may apply. No purchase required. Terms apply. Available at pockethosts.com/terms.
Hi, I'm Richard Karn, and you may have seen me on TV talking about the world's number one expandable garden hose. Well, the brand new Pocket Hose Copperhead with Pocket Pivot is here, and it's a total game changer. Old-fashioned hoses get kinks and creases at the spigot, but the Copperhead's Pocket Pivot swivels 360 degrees for full water flow and freedom to water with ease all around your home. When you're all done, this rust-proof anti-burst hose shrinks back down to pocket size for effortless handling and tidy storage. Plus, your super light and ultra-durable pocket hose Copperhead is backed with a 10-year warranty. What could be better than that? I'll tell you what, an exciting exclusive offer just for you. For a limited time, you can get a free pocket pivot and their 10-pattern sprayer with the purchase of any size Copperhead hose. Just text WATER to 64000. That's WATER to 64000 for your two free gifts with purchase. W-A-T-E-R to 64000.
By texting 64000, you agree to receive recurring automated marketing messages from Pocket Hosts. Message and data rates may apply. No purchase required. Terms apply. Available at pockethosts.com/terms.